This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Is anything in the world stable today? It seems not. Even with this announcement coming from Israel National News today, the West turns against Israel. The West turns against Israel. It's an editorial piece by Melanie Phillips, an excellent writer. And she's British, but she writes for Israel National News. The Jewish people, she said, need to relearn a painful and essential lesson that they are responsible for their own protection. Wow, what's going on? What has happened? What is going on in our world vis-a-vis Israel? She says Israel is holding its breath, that Donald Trump will help it totally destroy Iran's nuclear program. Well, that may be true, but for America, Donald Trump is not only refusing to provide the means to defeat Russia, but has been bullying Ukraine effectively to surrender and is persistently cozying up to Russia's president, Vladimir Putin. Even now, having declared his exasperation at Putin's continued belligerence and having been told by the Russian leader that he will retaliate strongly for the drone attack, Trump is treating Putin as a valuable ally who will help negotiate a deal with Iran. The idea that a cynical tyrant intent like Putin on spreading his power around the world should be negotiating a deal with genocidal fanatics like Iran at war with the West and intent upon exterminating Israel should chill the heart, writes Melanie Phillips. And she's right. If Trump walks away, Israel says it will act against Iran alone. But for the longer term, Israel is now preparing to wean itself off U.S. military aid, realizing that previous government's mistake in having become dangerously complacent about American support. It's a lethal illusion, writes Melanie Phillips, to imagine that it can afford to rely on anyone else, including America. Diaspora Jews are now starting to understand that their acceptance into Western countries, which for decades they took for granted, is a mirage, a total mirage. They find themselves caught up in a maelstrom in which they are under sustained attack as Jews because an entire political class, civil society, and even some of their own friends and family members are turning viciously against Israel. It's happening all over the world, friends. It just is happening. By demonizing Israel, writes Melanie Phillips, in this despicable way, the British and other Western governments are also putting their own Jewish communities at greater increased risk. It's all a nightmare. For diaspora Jews, Israel, which before October 7th unwisely allowed itself to bask in its growing power, has now painfully learned that diaspora Jews must now confront the only people who will protect and defend the Jewish people are the Jews themselves. It's as if Haman, the wicked Haman, has risen all over the Western world, in fact, all over the world, against the Jewish people. And this headline also coming today from Israel National News, Britain threatens concrete actions against Israel amid the Gaza conflict. The British Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, warns Israel of further concrete actions if it doesn't cease its Gaza offensive and lift aid restrictions. Wow. Britain actually receives military assistance from Israel, and yet is threatening concrete action against Israel, supposedly as an ally of Israel. Well, as the Jerusalem Post announced today, Israel's at a crossroads. And it's not just with regard to whether or not she can depend upon the nations, the West, to support her, but it's also what's happening internally. A government on the brink of collapse. And we're going to take a look at all of this here today on Viewpoint, and I'm glad that you've joined us. It's conversation, as always, with ever-increasing conviction, truth that transforms. And you say, well, what can we do about this? Well, maybe you and I can't do anything in particular about it. We can pray, but we need to understand the dynamics of what is taking place because it directly relates to biblical prophecy. And if something directly relates to biblical prophecy, That means it carries implications for you and for me. And that's why we talk about it here on this program today. It's not just about the information. It's about why the information is important and what the implications are from the information that could require transformation or transformative decisions and actions on our part. And so, again, I welcome you to Viewpoint. Some have said, going all the way back to the beginning of this program 30 years ago, you just can't listen to Viewpoint long and not be changed. Received a number of phone calls recently, just in the last few days, from various listeners across the country, expressing their gratitude for what we do here on this program, that lives are changing, that they're being strengthened amid the ever-weakening of the Christian mission, the Christian ministry across the country in the form of our local churches. People are frustrated, sometimes even angry. They feel that they're being betrayed. They feel that they're not being told the truth. And as they listen to Viewpoint, over a period of time, they begin to realize what they've been missing. And they're encouraged. They're strengthened. And so, in effect, one of the great pillars of this program is discipling for destiny. And that's exactly what we do. Teaching people to obey whatever God has commanded. You see, that's the essence of the Great Commission. The essence of the Great Commission is not evangelization, bringing about converts. It's about teaching people to follow the Lord and obey his voice. That's what Jesus said was the essence of the Great Commission. And our great omission is that we failed to do that. We decided to exchange discipleship for evangelization because we could count the numbers, notch our belts in pride, raise money, and so on. If we could notch our belts saying we got so many converts today or last year, whatever. That was never God's intention. In fact, God says the numbers are not telling at all. He says, many are going to come in my name and deceive many. He said, broad is the way that leads to destruction, and most of the people are the ones that go in there, but narrow is the way that leads to life, and precious few are those that find it. Why? Because precious few are going to be willing to do the will of the Father, both in spirit and in truth. Well, the same is true over there in the Middle East. The same is true in Israel. And they're struggling deeply. They have political struggles. They have spiritual struggles. And their religious struggles are not necessarily spiritual struggles. They're just religious struggles. Kind of like the religious struggles that took place there in the time of Jesus with the three great parties, the Sadducees, the Pharisees, all of those great power brokers. They weren't necessarily interested in spiritual things. They were interested in religious power, perks, and position. Happening today, we're going to take a look at it and why all of this is important and converging right now.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
On Viewpoint today, we're going to attempt to connect some dots that otherwise do not seem like they're connectable, but indeed they are. And we're going to give you a hint as to why they may be connectable and for what reason as it relates to biblical prophecy right now. From the Russian Times came this article today, NATO more powerful than Romans and Napoleon. Now, what does that mean? Well, the leader of NATO, Mark Rutte, said NATO is the most powerful alliance in global history. He's the Secretary General of NATO, and he claimed, comparing the U.S.-led bloc, NATO, to the Roman Empire and Napoleon's army. He urged member states to ramp up military spending to make NATO even more lethal. He said NATO is the most powerful defense alliance in world history, even more powerful than the Roman Empire and Napoleon's empire. He stated that just Wednesday. You say, well, what does that have to do with the Bible? What does it have to do with Israel? What does it have to do with anything other than NATO? Well, it has everything to do with it because, friends, as we've said for a very long time here on this program, going all the way back to Russia's attack on Ukraine, it's all about NATO. It's all about the resurrection of the ancient Roman Empire that Daniel the prophet spoke of in his great Colossus vision there in the book of Daniel, the final great empire, the resurrected Roman Empire. The same empire that was in power when Jesus showed up on the scene and was born will be the same power that will be in power when he comes again. So, NATO, with Russia's attack on Ukraine, was expanded in ways that had that not happened, would never have taken place. The Baltic nations then were brought into NATO, which had resisted being part of NATO. They were the farthest northern reaches of the ancient Roman Empire, right on the very edge of the ancient Roman Empire. And now they're part of NATO, or you might say the resurrected Roman Empire. When I hear the Secretary General, Mark Rutte, claim on Wednesday that NATO now is more powerful, the greatest defense alliance in world history, more powerful than the ancient Roman Empire, it caught my attention. And it should catch yours too. Because what it's actually saying to us is, we are seeing the resurrection, or have seen and are seeing the resurrection of the ancient Roman Empire occurring right before our eyes, and nobody's even talking about it. Not in those terms. They're just talking about it as NATO, North Atlantic Treaty Organization. But it's more than that, friends. It comprises virtually all of the nations of the ancient Roman Empire, and if you bring together also some of the nations that are surround the Mediterranean that were not part of NATO or not part of the EU, that were brought in under Nicolas Sarkozy to the EU a number of years ago, you're looking at a very, very large group of nations to cover the whole area that once was occupied and ruled by the most powerful empire in world history before NATO. Some might say, well, before the United States. Well, the United States is the premier leader of NATO. And so what we're looking at here, just to put it in as clear a terms as possible, we're looking at a situation that is arising in front of our eyes where the movement, the reconfiguration of nations in the world is coming into alignment with what we would have expected if we were clear and honest readers of biblical prophecy. In other words, that which is going to set the stage for the great battles that we're foretold are going to happen, whether it's the Battle of Gog and Magog of Ezekiel 38 and 39, or whether it's the Battle of Armageddon, all of those configurations of nations are being formed even as we speak. And it doesn't happen overnight. The Titanic, couldn't be steered immediately away from the iceberg, even though they had notice of it, but it was too late. They collided, and the Titanic sank. So what we're doing right here now is providing to our listeners the opportunity to gain insight into what is taking place so that you will not be taken unawares with what is going to be happening hereafter, shortly. And by shortly, I mean in the next few months and years. It's all happening very quickly. Now, at the same time, we have a situation arising in Israel. For instance, if you were to read Ezekiel 38 and 39, you would find that before the great battle of Gog and Magog, where Russia and Persia, which is Iran, and Libya, and Togarma, Gomer, and so on, many other nations with them, confederate together in secret to attack Israel to take a spoil. The Bible says that is going to happen in the latter days. That's the latter portion of the last days that began on the day of Pentecost or Shavuot. So, we're living in that moment of time as we speak, the latter days. Ezekiel 38 also tells us that it's going to be at a time when Israel is in relative safety. Now, is Israel in relative safety today? Well, it depends on how you define relative safety, I suppose. Up until the attack on October 7th, Israel was living in relative safety, and it caught Israel off guard. So a lot of accusations are flying back and forth against Netanyahu's government, saying you were negligent, you didn't understand what was going on, you didn't bring it to our attention, and look what a horrible thing took place. But up until that time, even in writings in Jerusalem Post, Israel National News, and so on, they were admitting that Israel is in relative safety. Unwalled villages, just as defined in Ezekiel 38. Now, something is going to happen to bring that condition back into a reconcilable truth. But in the meantime, we're going to take a look in the next few minutes why the Jerusalem Post says that Israel's at a crossroads right now. What's going on to bring Israel to crossroads internally? Not externally now, but internally. Bills have already been introduced to dissolve the Knesset, through Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's meeting with the key actors in that drama to avert that outcome. You see, Israel's government is totally different than ours. They have, 12 different parties? Can you imagine dealing with 12 different parties? And any two or three of them, if they aggregate together to withdraw from the government, can cause the whole government to collapse, and you have to have another election. Well, let's take a look at the historical reality of Israel's government. Only three Israeli governments in the country's 77-year history have completed a full four-year term. Only three. Golda Meir, from 1969 to 1974. Menachem Begin, 1977 to 1981. And then Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's fourth government from 2015 to 2020. What is this, the third or fourth time Benjamin Netanyahu has been the prime minister of Israel? Nobody has ever had that kind of power, that kind of continuity there in Israel's history. But that's the historic reality. And that historic reality hangs heavy over Netanyahu's current coalition, the 37th government. which in spite of the colossal failure of October 7th, has already outlasted about 75% of all the predecessors, and astonishingly, it has endured longer than most of them. So now, though it's facing its most serious crisis yet, the issue threatening to bring it down is one of those that has dogged Israel politics for decades. This conscription of Haredi or ultra-Orthodox men into the army. Believe it or not, that's the big issue. And it's not going away. At the core of the drama is a yawning gap between what Haredi rabbinical and political leaders want and what the rest of the country is increasingly demanding. The Haredi or ultra-Orthodox want things to remain as they are, pushing for legislation that would once again exempt tens of thousands of yeshiva seminary students from IDF service. The rest of the country, on the other hand, worn down by 600 days of war, repeated reserve duty, and a deepening manpower crisis, is saying, that's enough. We're not going to play this game anymore. For the Haredi leadership, both political and rabbinic, it's as if October 7th never even happened. It's irrelevant to them because none of their men had been required to serve. So it's as if hundreds of thousands of reservists haven't put their lives on hold for the rest of the country. It's as if the frustration and anger of the non-Haredi public over unequal burden sharing simply doesn't exist. And now, the Netanyahu government is having to deal with it because the pressure has been put on by the October 7th debacle that is still unresolved. Pressure. Pressure brings about change that otherwise would never be contemplated. And the New Testament word for pressure is tribulation. So Israel has experienced a kind of political tribulation. And it's threatening their government. It's threatening the ability of Israel to survive internally. On Tuesday of this week, a last-ditch meeting was held between Haredi leaders and the chairman of the Knesset Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee in search of some sort of compromise. It failed. So bills have already been introduced to dissolve the Knesset, in other words, the government of Israel once again. So Benjamin Netanyahu is in deep trouble again. The whole government of Israel is in deep trouble. How does that play out when Israel is facing existential threats from outside? For instance, as Melanie Phillips wrote, the West is turning against Israel. If the West is turning against Israel and Iran is breathing threatenings and slaughterings against Israel to wipe Israel off the face of the earth, including the United States of America, where does Israel stand? Where does Israel stand? I'm going to give you a clue. Because Melanie Phillips is right. But she didn't cite the biblical truth of it. If you want to find out where Israel stands, you have to go back to the book of Numbers, where a prophet by the name of Balaam, or Balaam, compromised himself five times trying to pray out from under the known will of God so as to be able to bless Moab and its king and curse Israel. And finally, God had to speak to him through the mouth of a donkey and crush his foot by the donkey against a wall in order to get his attention. And as a result of that, the prophet Balaam came out and said these words, Israel will never be reckoned among the nations. I want you to think about the import of that. Israel will never be reckoned among the nations, no matter how hard they try. So where is the reckoning going to take place?
There is so much more about Chuck Chrismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
Always a blessing to be able to join you here on Viewpoint to confront the deepest issues that touch our hearts and our homes, not just here on these shores, but all over the world, because they all affect us. We need to realize that we're not a bunch of hermits here in the United States of America. We're not hermits. Yes, God calls us to come apart and be separate. Separate from the spirit of the world. Not calling us out of the world, but out from the spirit of the world. In other words, out of the spirit of Egypt, into the spirit of trusting God. The problem is that Israel still lives in Egypt. And so do most Christians. Why? Because we have never learned the lesson that God tried to teach both the Hebrews coming out of Egypt, bringing them out of Egypt through the wilderness and toward the promised land. He could not let them into the promised land because they refused to trust God. How did God know they refused to trust him? Because they refused to obey him. The only way true trust in God can be measured is by obedience. That's God's measure. You may not like it. You may try to label it as legalism. You can call it whatever you want. But Jesus said, if you love me, you'll do my will. You'll keep my commandments. If you don't, you won't. Very simple. John chapter 14. John, the disciple, right there in his epistle said, look, this is the love of God, that you keep his commandments, and his commandments are not grievous. In other words, you obey his voice. You do his will. That's what Jesus came to do. He was the last Adam. The first Adam refused to obey, rationalized his disobedience together with his wife Eve, and the rest is history that's contaminated the spirit of humankind ever since. And God, in this moment of history, is giving us one last opportunity, whether or not we'll be tested in the wilderness of our time, to obey his voice, no matter what else is happening and being done in the world around us. And Israel is facing that test as we speak. And in a real respect, Israel is not going to pass the test again. You say, how do you know that? Well, because ultimately, God is going to discipline Israel again, worse than she's ever been disciplined before. As you read Zechariah, what is it, chapter 11 or 12, something like that, where God is going to discipline Israel by allowing 2/3 of all the Jewish people on the planet to lose their lives in a final God corrective discipline because of their refusal to obey his voice and their refusal to receive the salvation via Yeshua the Messiah that has been offered to them. And only then, after all of that additional carnage, when Yeshua, Christ, the Messiah, the Holy One of Israel, shows up on the scene in Israel's most existential moment, when all the nations of the earth have come against her, right there in Zechariah chapter 12, only then will they see and recognize him whom they have pierced. And I'll tell you, it's going to be a holy moment of repentance. The prophet Zechariah describes it. So great is going to be the weeping among the Jewish people that they won't even weep together. They'll weep separately, because each one of them is going to realize, this isn't something that was done to me by the rest of the people. I embrace this rejection of Messiah. I refuse to trust God. I refuse to embrace him. And this is what has happened. Oh, as they say, OMG, oh my God. That's what's going to happen. Sooner than later. So you say, well, why are you sharing that with me? I'm a professing Christian. That's exactly the point, friends. Paul, the apostle, in Romans chapter 11, says if God would cut off the branches of the original olive tree in discipline, why do you think he wouldn't cut off professing Gentile Christians? Even the more so for their refusal to obey. Refusal to trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. But fortunately, the Apostle Paul said that for Israel, if they would repent and turn from their own rebellion, their own stubbornness, their own prideful rejection, their own reliance just upon themselves, and come to the place where they would put their full confidence and trust in the God who made and preserved them a nation, then he would graft them back into that olive tree. And Paul says, if that could happen with the original olive branches, those that remain, then the same thing could happen with us as Gentiles if we would repent. That's a big if. If is the biggest little word in the Bible. In other words, it's the most important. If. You remember, if my people, and so on. If you, then I. If you, then I. If you, then I. The whole Bible is framed around the word if. So, Israel is facing a ticking time bomb internally right now. And it has to do with whether or not they're going to require yeshiva students coming from the ultra-Orthodox group to be mandated to be drafted into Israel's army. Up till now, it hasn't happened. Somehow, the Haredi or the ultra-Orthodox think that they are special, beyond special, and they don't have to share the burden of Israel's defense. We just have to go to the yeshiva, that is, the seminary, study the Torah all day long. So the rest of the country, you can think, is very much up in arms now, because there are about 169,000 of these Haredi men who are in the yeshivas that are eligible for the draft and are not there, so requiring, therefore, all the rest of the country and their young men to make up the difference, even in the face of horrific war, and call up the reservists over and over and over again, when these folk who have never served a day in their life should have been called up to ease the burden. That's what Benjamin Netanyahu is facing with his government as we speak at this very moment. One writer said, Israel certainly isn't a democracy in practice to men and women who have had to fight in the army for more than a year and a half now. If Haredim had been integrated into society and into the IDF sooner, it might have meant less strain on them. The military draft is a requirement by law. Let's put it in these terms. Remember back in the Vietnam War? Maybe you don't. Maybe you're not old enough to remember. I was in my early 20s during the Vietnam War. A friend of mine, a dear friend, my climbing partner, was drafted. Everybody feared to have their number called. I was able to avoid the draft itself by serving as a math teacher in one of the most dangerous school districts in the state of California. I taught math there. So, I understand what was going on. We had people that were fleeing this country to go to Canada and other places around the world to avoid the draft. Somewhere around 50,000 American young men ended up having to go to Vietnam. It was a horrific war. Horrific. Friends of mine, one of my brothers was there, ended up speaking Vietnamese fluently, flew in helicopters across the whole terrain, translating what was going on the ground. It was a nasty, nasty time. People were fleeing. Well, that's what the Haredi are doing. When this war broke out, guess what? The seminaries were flooded with ultra-Orthodox young men fleeing the draft. That's what happened. And you can understand why that might be a problem. Now, that's internally. Now we move back to the broader picture with NATO. And before we do that, I want to make available to you two books. One, Out of Egypt. Out of Egypt is one of the most important books I have ever written. Why? Because it ties together God's heart, not only for Israel, but for all of us who would have the hope of salvation. Oh, it's not written like any other book concerning salvation that you've ever read, because it ties together the whole Bible, not just your favorite passages of Scripture. And the big problem for God was the spirit of Egypt. And that's why over 400 times the words out of Egypt or similar words can be found from Genesis to Revelation. Why did God put so much emphasis on it? We'll talk about that in a moment.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
For whatever it's worth, we're not here on Viewpoint to hawk books. These books that we're talking about contain very specific messages for this moment in time, for God's people, to prepare, to be strengthened, to be directed, in the midst of the chaos and confusion that's going on in our world, and yes, even in the church. Out of Egypt is one of those books. God was so frustrated with the children of Israel as they came out of Egypt. Here he had taken them out of Egypt with a mighty hand. He had proved his trustworthiness and why they should trust him, but they refused. And at every turn, they murmured, they complained, they bellyached, they rebelled. They even had leaders who led rebellions, Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And God dealt with them summarily, and the people still rebelled. God said, okay, you said, would to God we have died in the land of Egypt. As you've spoken, so shall it be. And he said, you're all going to die in the wilderness. You're not going into the promised land. He took them out of Egypt, but he couldn't get Egypt out of them. And that's what the book is about. That's what the whole gospel is about. That's what the whole Bible is about. Getting the spirit of Egypt out of us so that we truly trust God. As the scripture says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he'll direct your path. But we don't believe that. We only believe it in theory. In theory, but in practice, not so much. And this book, Out of Egypt, will help you to come to grips with what that looks like. I tell you, you will not be disappointed. Just read it slowly. Absorb. Why do you think a guy out there in San Francisco who was sent a copy of the book by a guy that served in our post office locally, why do you think he read the book 7 times? Because it was so loaded. And you'll find out yourself. $15 will put the book in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255, writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. Out of Egypt. Don't miss it. Now, the other book is King of the Mountain. And what is taking place now is the staging for the final battle, Satan's final battle, repositioning the nations for the final battle to take over the Temple Mount in his name. If you don't have the book, I urge you to get it. It'll open your eyes. $15 will put the book in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org. That's saveus.org. Again, call us, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at Save America Ministries. And by the way, if you're getting this book and Out of Egypt together, instead of $6 each for postage and handling, it'll be $6 for the first book and only $2 for the next book. Okay, all that having been said, let us move back to the article from the Russian Times today. NATO, more powerful than Romans and Napoleon. The greatest, most powerful alliance in global history, said Secretary General Mark Rutte of NATO. He said, we must make NATO stronger, fairer, and more lethal. And we need more resources so that we're prepared to face any threat. Rutte claimed that Russia could attack NATO within several years and said the bloc would not be prepared to defend itself unless it moves beyond its long-held 2% of GDP defense spending benchmark. So John Laughlin, a historian and specialist in international affairs, pointed out the statement, the Roman and Napoleonic empires were not alliances. They were just states. But is NATO now an empire? Well, maybe it is. Maybe, just maybe, it really is the resurrected Roman Empire that Daniel the prophet foresaw in the Great Colossus, which would be the last great empire on earth at the time of Jesus' return. Yes, there will be conflicts between other groups. We know that the kings of the East are going to be prominent in coming across a dried up Euphrates River, right out of the book of Revelation, to wage the battle of Armageddon. We know that the king of the North, the kings of the South, and so on, they're all going to be engaged in that final great battle. But there is a resurrected Roman Empire, which is the aggregation of the nations of the West. Now, those nations purport to be Christian, at least historically. Are they today? Hardly. Hardly. They will rise up, and ultimately someone within its ranks will say, you know what? I'm God. I've been raised up for such a time as this to rule and reign over the earth. He will rise up in the shoes of Satan himself. We call him the Antichrist. At first, he'll be received as the greatest thing since sliced bread. People will, you know, usher him in with flag waving. They'll think that he is the great peacemaker. He is the Prince of Peace. Because the world will be in such a tough situation. So he'll appear to be the Prince of Peace. And then when he gets into power, initially he will have shown some level of favor toward Israel, perhaps being the one to help facilitate the building of the temple. And then when it's built, he will walk into that temple and declare himself God. The Apostle Paul wrote about it right there in Thessalonians. You might want to go back and read about it. But in the meantime, there is this resurrected Roman Empire under the name of NATO, North Atlantic Treaty Organization. So, the Secretary General Mark Rutte has stated that NATO now considers the Baltic and Black Seas areas of strategic responsibility. Oh, so now it's expanding even the more so. The Baltic and the Black Seas, way up there in the north, bordering on Russia. He made the remarks on Wednesday, ahead of a meeting of NATO defense ministers. They were questioning about the rising tensions in the Baltic region. He said there's a constant threat of attacks on our critical undersea infrastructure. He also threatened NATO's devastating response when asked if it's prepared for potential Russian hardcore attack in the Baltic region, pointing to a series of damaging sabotage to various communication structures in the Baltic Sea, and a gas pipeline in the Gulf of Finland. But Moscow considers the Baltic Sea a strategic area for its naval operations and energy exports. It has repeatedly dismissed the allegations of sabotage. Russia's Baltic fleet, based in the Kaliningrad region, plays a crucial role in protecting Russia's western maritime borders and maintaining access to the Baltic Sea. The fleet is seen as a vital asset in Russia's military posture toward NATO's eastern flank. Russia's Black Sea Fleet is headquartered in the port of Sevastopol, Crimea, Crimea and is a key component of the country's naval power. So you can see now why Russia would consider NATO up on its border with Ukraine being brought in as a serious offense. Now, whether or not you justify Russia's action in invading Ukraine, that's another matter. But you have to be able to see that Russia would consider that to be dangerous and had warned about it since 2014. Don't do this. But we did it anyway. Now, what's happening in the meantime? Well, the same Secretary General of NATO said he's proposing a target of 5% of member states' GDP at the upcoming summit, insisting that every bloc member, every country, more than doubles their spending on its military to 5% of GDP. Well, that's what Donald Trump has been demanding now since assuming office. He intensified demands that the bloc's European members spend more on defense and accused them of failing to shoulder the burden equitably. 10 of the 32 members of NATO don't even spend 2% of their GDP on defense. The U.S. ambassador to NATO, Matthew Whitaker, warned member states that the failure to agree to the new 5% benchmark could result in Trump declining to attend the summit in late June. Marco Rubio, our Secretary of State, said that NATO only makes sense as long as it's a real defense alliance, not the United States and a bunch of junior partners that aren't doing their fair share. In April, U.S. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth warned European NATO countries that the time of the United States being the sole guarantor of European security has passed. Something is going to transpire. All of that will result in the strengthening of the resurrected Roman Empire, NATO. Where will it go? Well, we know. We're already told right here today with an article that came out as an opinion piece. We started with the Israel National News. The West turns against Israel. Who is the West? NATO, my friends. In other words, Israel is going to have to trust God. And they don't. Not now. They trust the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, but particularly the United States. And in some respects, some of the Western nations. But not now. The West is turning against Israel. In other words, friends, what this means is Israel will not be reckoned among the nations, as we were told in the book of Numbers. What is it, about chapter 24? Israel will stand alone. Why? Because God chose them to demonstrate a people that would trust him, and what he would do with a people who would truly trust him, revealed in their obedience to his word, his will, and his ways. So, my question, do you really trust God? Are you sure? Or are you still living in the spirit of Egypt? Don't answer too quickly, because the majority of the church is in Egypt. Oh, yes, we were supposedly saved out of Egypt, but still living in the spirit of Egypt. And they were not allowed into the promised land. Consider it. Get a copy of the book, Out of Egypt. It'll deeply touch your heart. God bless and be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.